Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for the Coach K and Joe Show. The Coach K and Joe Show is brought to you by Idea Fusion Media, Hubler and Sons of Jasper and Vincennes, Harmon Dental Care, and by Jasper Today. Now, here's Joe Milligan and Ken Coach K Schultheis.
Hello, and welcome to this week's edition of the Coach K and Joe Show. I'm Joe, and the coach is off celebrating Christmas with his family, much like I will be in just a few minutes. Please enjoy this best of 2014. Starting next Friday, you'll be able to listen to our show every Friday from 10 to noon on 93.7 The Scratch in Jasper. If you can't get us on 93.7 The Scratch, just tune in to www.coachkandjoeshow.com and click the Listen Live button and listen live. You can also listen to our podcast 24 hours a day by going to our website as well and clicking on the podcast link. So until next week, enjoy this best of 2014 from the Coach K and Joe Show. Hi, this is Joe with the Coach K and Joe Show. Starting Friday, January 2nd, listen to the Coach K and Joe Show every Friday from 10 to noon on 93.7 The Scratch in Jasper. Coach K and I are excited to become a member of the Scratch family. So tune in every Friday to the Coach K and Joe Show on 93.7 The Scratch.
Looking for a dentist close to home? Look no further than Harmon Dental Care. Harmon Dental Care offers dentistry for the whole family. Cleanings and exams, natural-looking fillings, crowns, bridges, and more. With convenient hours and a clean, modern office, you'll feel completely comfortable. Call Harmon Dental Care today to schedule an appointment at 482-1060. Harmon Dental Care, creating beautiful smiles. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year's from Jasper Today, Milligan Communications, and the Milligan family, Joe, Liz, Ryan, Reed, Reese, and Ray.
Get the hole in the glory.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
This is Tom Deanhart of the Big Ten Network, and you're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back on the Coach K and Joe Show, and we're excited to be back. Our first guest on our first hour segment, he's a treasure in Indiana. And, Coach, I'm not patronizing you here. I really feel that way. I grew up watching you when I was living in Jasper, Indiana. My dad was a high school basketball coach, Ed Schultheis. I met you when you came down to the high school. I can't remember if you were working with the Pacers in the camps or you were working on some sporting goods things, but you were at the high school. My dad was athletic director at the time, and I was a high school kid running around in there, and I got to meet you. Coach Bobby Slick Leonard, welcome to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Okay, Joe. Thank you very much. Thank you. You know, I'm a big, I've always been, I like Jasper, Indiana. And I go down there, I go through Jasper. I made a speech down there several years back. But I go through Jasper because I go down every spring and spend about 3 or 4 days with one of my old players, Don Boosie, over in Holland. And so I go through Jasper and hit Huntingburg, and he lives out there on Old 64.
Don Boosie, the boo-boo, a tremendous defensive player. And let's start right there, Coach. Let's start with Don Boosie because he resonates in the southern part of the state quite a bit. This is Ken Schultheis, Coach K. When I was coaching at Jasper High School, Don Boosie was an assistant coach for the Southridge Raiders, which was a big rivalry. And you, as good as he was as a ABA and MBA player and at the University of Evansville, you could tell that he had such a hand in helping those Southridge teams as an assistant coach develop their game as well. What kind of a player, a mentality did Don Boosie bring to your teams?
Well, he was a great player. he was a great player. I used to put him on the toughest guy. Like if we were playing the Chicago Bulls, I'd put him on Michael Jordan. He always took the tough guy defensively. He really understood the game. He really, Boo really understood the game. And, you know, he was a great guy. He finally, when he came in, when I first got him, he wasn't a threat from three. But by the time he left, they had to guard him out there in that three-point area because he could hit, you know, he was dangerous out there. But I can't say enough good things about Boo Boo. He was a special guy, and he's still special to me today.
You know, Coach, I'm giggling a little bit because I'm just happy to have you on the show, and I know you probably get that from a lot of people. I call you a treasure to the state of Indiana and to hoops. You know, 60 years of your life you spent in basketball, I mean, really involved in basketball. Your family is a basketball family. Your wife was right there by your side, your wife, Nancy. I'm going to make this statement, and then maybe we can just talk briefly about it. You know, Indianapolis has become a sports mecca, professionally and collegiately, and great high school sports as well. Indiana, always known as a basketball state, but now kind of that centerpiece. And I know I was reading in your book, Boom Baby, My Basketball Life in Indiana. You were talking about growing up in Terre Haute, and you're talking about Highway 40 and how it was kind of the center of the Midwest. Everybody passed through Terre Haute. But you go on and you establish yourself with the Pacers and Indianapolis. I'm going to make this comment and just get some comments about that time. You and your wife go on WTTV, and you have the Pacer Telethon, and it's basically to save the Indiana Pacers, make sure they stay in Indianapolis. I'm going to say this, July 3rd, somewhere 1977, I believe it was, we're ushering into the NBA. I think that Indianapolis, I know Bill Hudnut and his group did tremendous things, and I'm sure you were a part of that. I think that that is a significant moment in the history of Indianapolis in Indiana sports. Without that telethon, without you and your family humbling itself, TTV making that effort, going on and saying, you know what, we're going to do whatever we can to save these Pacers. We'll have a telethon to go out there. I was a little guy watching in Jasper, Indiana. I sent some money in, $5 I think it was. I think it was significant to where Indianapolis is today as a sports mecca, that you were able to do that, willing to do that, and you kept the Pacers in Indianapolis.
Well, Joe, it would have been a shame. It would have been a shame if we'd lost the franchise. You know, when I first started with the Pacers back in 67, Indianapolis was a little run down. It was old. It was a little run down. And the Pacers kind of revitalized Indianapolis, and you know, we went from the Fairgrounds Coliseum and built Market Square Arena, and then of course we got the Colts. And had we lost that franchise, I don't know if the Colts would be here today. I don't know. So it was a very important time in the history of the Pacers, and fortunately, we got them. We still got them, and they're playing great. We beat the New York Knicks last night, and we're 20-1 at home. So we're having a good year.
Yeah, and we're going to get to the Pacers in just a few minutes. I do want to mention a few other things, just the amazing life that you have had, and if you're like myself, you just look back at what your life has been and how basketball has been such an important part of it. I know growing up for me, my dad was a high school coach. I grew up around it. I became a coach on the high school level. I've met some great people because of it. I've got to go some places. I've had some tremendous highs in my life and some tremendous lows. But, Coach, I got to believe when you look back, it's probably amazing and such a blessing that a round ball bouncing in the streets and blacktop and concrete and rock and cinder block of Terre Haute, Indiana, has given you the life that you've had for these last 60 years?
Well, if I go back, to high school, Terre Haute Gerstmeyer. It's now Terre Haute North. They consolidated over it like they did everywhere. But I had a great high school basketball coach by the name of Howard Sharp, and he is still second or third in the most wins in the history of the state of Indiana. But anyway, he was a protege of Glenn Curtis, and Glenn Curtis coached Johnny Wooden at Martinsville High School. So I had the fundamental background. Had it not been for basketball, I'd never gotten out of Terre Haute. There's no question about that. I grew up Depression and World War II, and had it not been for basketball, I'd probably been at a factory somewhere. But Branch McCracken down at IU, he saw something good in me, and the years we spent at Indiana University were great years. They were great years. Back then, you couldn't play as a freshman, but you had to win the Big Ten championship to get into the NCAA tournament. So our sophomore year, we finished, I don't know, third or something like that in the Big Ten, but the next year we won it all. We won the Big Ten championship, and we won the national championship, and then my senior year, we won the Big Ten again. But, you know, I've been down around that Assembly Hall, and when I see that 1953 flag hanging up there, it kind of brings back a lot of memories. And we had some kids from Southern Indiana on that 1953 championship team. We had Dick Farley from over at Winslow, Indiana. We had Burke Scott. He was from Tell City. We had Phil Byers, who played high school ball at Evansville Wrights. So we had a Southern Indiana flavor there. So that was really, you know, as I look back, and I tell kids this today, when you look back years down the road, you will say, those 4 years I spent at Indiana University were four of the greatest years of my life. That's where I met my wife. We've almost been married 60 years. That was really fun because you won.
You know, IU's a great place. I graduated from Indiana University. The names that you just mentioned are all people that I'm familiar with from growing up and my dad being from Evansville originally and then coaching in the area for years and years. You know, Coach, when you look at your life coming out of Terre Haute, you go to IU, you win a national championship in 53. Was the 53 team the best team, or was one of the other teams in there as good or better and just didn't win a national championship?
Well, we should have won it back-to-back. We should have won it back-to-back. That's one of the big disappointments in my basketball life, because we won it in 53. We started with three juniors and two sophomores. So we had everybody back, plus we had the bench, and we had a strong bench. We had everybody back. We won the Big Ten championship, and we were rated number one in the country the whole year, and Notre Dame upset us in the NCAA regional, and that was on a controversial call, I might add. But the 1954 team, we should have won it again.
Well, then you go on and you join the professional basketball, and again, I mean, talk about just a guy who's, if you want to put the word winner next to you, and I know you're pretty humble about that, just a down-to-earth guy, everything you've got involved in, you are associated with success, and you are associated with what I call successful people around you, great players. you know, playing on the pro level, the Minneapolis Lakers. Talk to us about just a few of the guys you played with. They're big names. If you love pro basketball or just love basketball in general, we'll recognize a few of those names. Tell us a little bit about your time on the pro level playing.
Well, I got out of IU, and back in those days, you had to spend a couple of years in the military, which I did. I spent a couple of years in the military, and then when I got out in September of 1956, and the camp with the Minneapolis Lakers training camp was opening about 2 weeks later. So I went right from being in the Army to training camp with the Lakers, and that was an experience. That was an experience. Those years I spent in Minneapolis, snowed all the time, cold. And so when they said, well, we're going to move the franchise to Los Angeles, become the Los Angeles Lakers, everybody on the ball club was tickled to death. But we went to World Championship Series in 1959 and got beat by the Boston Celtics with Bill Russell and Cousy and Tommy Heinsohn. And that ball club they had just, dominated. They dominated the NBA. And when we moved to Los Angeles in 1960, then I was on a ball club there. We had a good ball club with the Lakers first time out in Los Angeles. We had Elgin Baylor, and Jerry West was a rookie. And when it started out there, the fans in Southern California weren't used to, they didn't know nothing about pro basketball. And they had a counter where it counted the number of people coming in to the arena. And so when they played the national anthem, you could look up there and the American flag was blowing, and you could see how many people were coming in the place. And when we first started out, like in the first November, there were probably about 3,500, 4,000. By the time we got to the playoffs, that place was packed. It was packed. And that was the start of the Los Angeles Lakers in Southern California.
Well, you move on and you go in from the pros, and you played with guys like Elgin Baylor, Hot Rod Hundley, you played with George Mikan?
No, George is a guy, though, that gave me the nickname of Slick. And it happened, you mentioned Hot Rod Hundley. We drafted Hot Rod Hundley. Now, when I say Hot Rod Hundley, he was the first of three All-American guards that came out of West Virginia. He was the first one. Jerry West was the second one. And Rod Thorne, who's president of basketball operations in the NBA today, he was the third one. And so I was associated with all of them. But we decided Hot Rod was such a big name in West Virginia at the time, so we said, well, we're going to take a couple of exhibition games in there early in the fall. So we played at Morgantown, where the University of West Virginia is, and then got on a bus, and we're going to play the next night about 130, 40, 50 miles away. And got on that bus, and the guys went to sleep. And we're about halfway there, and there was a sign on the side of the road that said, truck stop 5 miles. So I was sitting with George Mikan, and he was coaching the ball club at the time. And everybody was asleep, but George and I were sitting up in a front seat with the peep lights on in a bus playing Hollywood Gin. And, everybody else was asleep. And George says to me, he said, Bobby, he said, you think we ought to stop at truck stop and let the guys get a cup of coffee and sandwich? I said, sure. So we pulled in, and it was a big truck stop up there in the mountains. And we pulled in there, And when the bus driver stopped and turned all the lights on, the guys were waking up and everything, I blitzed George Mikan across the board in that gin game. And he said, "How about buying me a cup of coffee? You're too slick for me." And Hot Rod was sitting back there waking up, and he heard him say slick, and they all started calling me that. So I
probably
the people down in southern Indiana, they probably don't really know who George Mikan was. But George Mikan was the most dominant, the most early on. He was the most dominant center in the NBA. They won four world championships when he was with the Minneapolis Lakers and changed the rules of the game. He was so dominant that they had to widen the lane, and then in a game in Fort Wayne held the ball on him, and the score was 19 to 18. And Danny Biasone, who owns Syracuse National, said, "We can't have that. People are not going to come out and see somebody hold the ball." So that's when they put in 24-second clock. So it changed. George Mikan really changed everything.
Yes, speaking of the shot clock, I know you think that was one of the major changes. I also have heard you say that you think the three-point shot is probably one of the two, along with the shot clock, one of the two most important changes that have been made in pro basketball for sure.
Well, those two changes is the biggest changes that I saw in not only in my pro career. When you stop and think about it, Joe, you know, the American Basketball Association had the three-point line. Well, when we merged into the NBA, we had a couple guys that weren't too high on the three-point line, and one of them was Red Auerbach with the Boston Celtics, and then later on he gets Larry Bird and Danny Ainge. They're all shooting threes out there. But anyway, we got the thing through. And, you know, I felt like the fans in Denver, San Antonio, Indianapolis, New Jersey, Nets, I felt like the fans there, which is the teams that made it into, merged into the NBA, the ABA teams, I said the fans are no different in the rest of the league than they were in those four cities. And they love the three-point line. Well, you know what's happened. It's one of the most popular things. All of a sudden they're shooting it in high school. They got a college three-point line. So it's the big thing about it that I've always felt is you go into the last 2 minutes of a ball game. If you got an eight-point lead, let's say you got an eight-point lead last 2 minutes, the fans before that had started getting up and leaving because the team could hold the ball, you know. But with that three-point line in there, they stayed right to the end. And there's a lot of games have been lost with 2 minutes to play with that three-point line.
Coach, I agree with you 100%. I know when I started coaching on the high school level in the late 80s, there was no three-point line. Within a couple years, we had a three-point line. It changed the high school game. It gave some kids that maybe would not have been on that floor because they couldn't handle the ball as well, or they weren't big enough, but they could shoot it. You know, we had to put them out there, or we had to defend them. And I know I traded three-point shots for free throws and overcame a 15-point lead. My team did to win a sectional round game down 15 with 2 minutes and 20 seconds left. And nobody left after we hit a couple threes, and we ended up winning that game. So you're spot on that three-point shot, and probably as well on the shot clock. You know, Coach, a lot of people may not remember this, and they should. You take over the Pacers in the ABA, and you lit that franchise on fire. Five final appearances in the ABA, three ABA championships. Again, I'm coming back to being a winner. Three ABA championships. Jimmy Ryle, Mel Daniels, Rick Mount, Roger Brown, guys like that playing for you. Three championships, five final appearances. What a run it was for the Pacers in the ABA.
Well, it was great. I mean, when you look at the whole time, there were 5 years where we went to the championship series. You know, that's a lot of playoff series to get there. But we went to the championship series. We won it three times. But the other, there were three other years there when we didn't get the championship series, but we did get to the conference finals. So, you know, it was a stretch of, and I look back, the best ball club we had was in 73. And that was the front line of Mel Daniels, Roger Brown, who just went in the Hall of Fame, and George McGinnis. And that would be a tough front line for anybody to handle.
Well, of course, George McGinnis was a great high school player in the state, a great player at IU for a short time. And I just remember seeing how strong he was. I can remember watching a game. He went up for a dunk and bent the rim halfway down. And back then, there were no breakaways, and they had to wait to get a new rim and get it on the game. I mean, tell us, George McGinnis had to be, I mean, was he as strong as he looked on TV?
Hey, you know, it's sometimes, today, you look at LeBron James. LeBron James does not pump iron. He does not pump weights. It's just natural. And it's the same way with George McGinnis. Just natural. He never lifted weights or nothing. And he was, you talk about strong. He was strong. In my mind, Joe, and I've seen everything that's come down the pike, George McGinnis is one of the greatest power forwards that ever played the game. And I've told people before, I said, you know, the NBA talked about Karl Malone. I would take George McGinnis over Karl Malone any day. So, you know, he was a great player. And the great thing about it was the New York Knicks in 73 won the NBA championship. They beat the Lakers with Chamberlain and West. So the NBA at that time thought, well, here's a good chance to embarrass the ABA. So we scheduled an exhibition game. But it was all put together. And that was a Nick Ball club with Earl Pearl Monroe, Walt Frazier, Willis Reed, Dave DeBuscher, Bill Bradley. And they came into Indianapolis. And Bill Bradley, who later became a United States Senator, he got up down at the athletic club and started talking about the Indiana cornfields. Well, it made Roger Brown mad. And Roger that night said, "Slick, let me have him." And Roger tore him up. He tore him up. And at the end of the third quarter, now there's the NBA champions. At the end of the third quarter, we had them down 17. So that's just let people know how good, as we went through the years, how good the ABA got. And we had players like the Iceman at San Antonio, George Gervin, who won the NBA scoring championship a couple times, and Dr. J, Julius Erving, Dan Issel, Artis Gilmore down there at Kentucky. There were a lot of great players in the ABA.
Absolutely. I mean, when you look at the all-time top 100 players that they put out a few years ago, there's a lot of former ABA players in that group. Hall of Famers today. And absolutely, you should be one of those as well. Let's talk a little bit about the Pacers now, Coach. You know, the thing about the NBA, in my opinion, is the players are so good that if you're not ready to play, I don't care what the record is, if you're not ready to play on that night, you're going to get beat. This Pacer team, under Coach Vogel, their mentality has been pretty solid up to this point, being ready to play on both ends of the court on almost night in and night out, and really have done a great job on that defensive end.
Well, that's their identity. Their identity, when they play their greatest basketball games, their identity is the defensive end of the floor. Well, you've been around coaching, and it's always been the same, Joe. It's always been a game of defense and rebounding. And if you do those two things, if you do those two things on nights where you can't put the ball in the hoop, you can't shoot it in the ocean, those two things, defense and rebounding, will keep you in the game and give you a chance to win.
When you look at the metamorphosis, and I call it a metamorphosis, of the Pacers, went through that struggle period where they changed out a lot of players, trying to change the attitude and the makeup of the team, and not just have a team, but a real team, a team on and off the court that Indianapolis, Indiana, and Indiana in general can be proud of in the NBA. There was a struggle there. Finally, Coach Vogel comes in. We get a George Hill. We get Paul George. We get a Hibbert that's growing into to being just, he's just such a space eater down in the post. And Paul George is becoming an elite player. What does, in your opinion, as a coach, and we got to have players, we all know that, we're better coaches when we have really good players. But what is Frank, what has Coach Vogel brought to the Pacers in your mind as a coach to help move this team up the ladder?
Well, the biggest thing about Frank, the biggest thing about Frank is he is an eternal optimist. He's optimistic. You can't get him to say anything negative. He's optimistic. He's optimistic about the players. Even when one or two of them will have bad nights, he goes to that optimism. But, you know, when Larry Bird came back in, and you know, Larry won championships at with the Celtics, and he knew what it took to win. And that's when he, you know, he makes the deal, gets George Hill, gets Paul George. One of the biggest signings he made was David West. David West is somewhat the backbone of this team. But we've got now we've got the bench coming off. Danny Granger's healthy, coming off the bench, and we've got a better bench than we have ever had. So everything, you know, when you're sitting there 31 and 7 in the NBA, you're doing some things right. We got the best record out of 30 ball clubs in the NBA. We got the best record right now.
Absolutely, and Coach, a win over the Knicks, I believe, last night for the Pacers, and of course that has been a great rivalry since the meltdown in the Garden and the miracle. I don't call them miracle shots, just the gamer shots of Reggie Miller. But when you look at this Pacer team, this is a long season. You well know that. You've been through it as a coach, broadcaster, player, whatever. Does this team need to make some moves, add something to the team, in your opinion? Not necessarily a specific player, but a specific position. Do they need to add something to this team in order to make that deep run and maybe get to an NBA Finals?
Well, yes and no. I feel like Joe, that if we had a better backup center, for Roy Hibbert, so that when he goes out of the ball game, we can have a guy come in there that has a low post presence. But I don't know if Larry will make any moves. I don't know if he'll make any moves. This club, the way it stands right now, has a chance, with about four or five other ball clubs, has a chance to win the whole ball of wax. But we have to wait until May and June to find out really what's going on.
Yeah, the NBA is a long season, and you just got to stay as much physically tough, you got to stay mentally tough. Coach, in your book, Boom Baby, My Basketball Life in Indiana, I want to at least make one more comment about it. As you get into the book, and it's a wonderful book, it just shows how much you love family, how much you love just the life you've had here in Indiana. You said, and your partner in life, 60 years, Nancy's been an inspiration to me and our five children, and you go on to name them. This is in the book. I'm reading from it. Nancy is the first to admit she's a little demanding. Her philosophy, everything you say or do affects somebody else, either good or bad. No gossiping, no lies, don't cheat, be respectful, give it everything you've got, love everything, and always go to church on Sunday. I love that. Those are wonderful things to live by. And you know what? As much as you're a coach, that sounds like a coach talking to his team.
Well, that's the way she's lived her life. That's the way she's lived her life. She runs the show here, Joe. I don't. She runs the show and always has. Always has. She's been a great, great mother. But, boy, this grandmother thing, I mean, she's out of sight. These grandkids, we got 12 of them. Boy, they think she, you know, they love their grandma. So, you know, it's been good. It's really been good. And, you know, you mentioned New York Knicks game last night. Reggie Miller was in with ESPN to do the game, and of course, I was with Reggie for 18 years, and a lot of Boom Babies in that time. But I still look back at that one, and you said, well, it's not a miracle. Well, it was a miracle because he scored 8 points in 13 seconds at Madison Square Garden. And it's really probably the way it happened is probably the greatest finish of a game I've ever seen.
Coach, we've got one more question for you before we let you go, and we just really appreciate the time you've given us, and we want to respect it as well. We got one more question. Go ahead.
Okay, Coach, this is Joe. I got a comment from a longtime listener, and he said, you know, it wasn't a question as much as a comment. He said, thanks for the memories from a kid from Elwood that used to sit in the rafters in the Coliseum with my dad and brothers with Hook's discount tickets. Neto, Mel, Roger, Freddie, George, Billy, and the rest of the characters were my life back then. Thank you.
Isn't that terrific? Yeah, that's true.
It certainly isn't, and you're terrific. And we absolutely understand you're just a human being, but you have really stayed true to who you are and your love. And, folks, I really believe, to our listeners, I really believe this. I believe you love not only basketball and your family, but you love Indiana because you have been one of the great ambassadors and made significant contributions that may not ever get up in the state house, may not show up in the history book, but I really believe that the recognition we get in Indiana and Indianapolis has a big part to do with Bobby Slick Leonard and his commitment to Indiana, to Indianapolis, to the Pacers, to the state in general. And I want to thank you for that.
Well, you know, I'm a Hoosier. I'm a Hoosier. And let me close it out and wish everybody down in southern Indiana a great 2014, a great year. Have fun. Have a lot of fun.
Coach, thank you so much, and we appreciate it. And hopefully when we get up to a Pacer game, we can walk by you if you're on the radio and say hi and also have you back on the show. Give our best to Nancy and the rest of your family. We're going to go to break. When we come back, Jerry Palm with CBS Sports will be on. We'll talk a little bracketology for the NCAA. You've been listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Hi, this is Joe with the Coach K and Joe Show. Starting Friday, January 2nd, listen to the Coach K and Joe Show every Friday from 10 to noon on 93.7 The Scratch in Jasper. Coach K and I are excited to become a member of the Scratch family. So tune in every Friday to the Coach K and Joe Show on 93.7 The Scratch.
Hey, this is Coach K. Want to get the word out about your business? Well, team up with the Coach K and Joe Show
and form a winning marketing team. We've had over 5,000 listeners through our first three shows, and we can help put your marketing dollars to work 24 hours a day. Through our live shows and our 24-hour available podcasts, your marketing dollars can work for you around the clock. So give us a call at Milligan Communications, 812-630-2449, and we will help your marketing dollars to score for you. Happy holidays. Coach K here, and from my family, Janet, Josh, Paige, and Scott, to your family, here's wishing you a very Merry Christmas. And yes, Christmas includes Christ. He's the reason for the season. And have a blessed new year.
In the heat of battle, my father wove a tapestry of obscenity that, as far as we know, is still hanging in space over Lake Michigan.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
This is Tom Deanhart of the Big Ten Network, and you're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back on the Coach K and Joe Show. I'm Joe Milligan, joined by the coach, Coach K, Ken Schulteis. And I'll tell you what, Coach, I'm totally excited about this interview. I've been known as the Purdue Homer on the Coach K and Joe Show, and it's a badge that I proudly wear. And we're talking to one of the Milligan family's favorite Boilermakers, Chris Kramer. Chris, how are you doing today?
Doing pretty well. Just a cold, rainy day in Germany, but, you know, things are going well.
You know, Chris, before, you know, we start talking Purdue, can you tell us a little bit about what's been up with Chris Kramer? I know you've been in Puerto Rico, you've been in Germany. Tell us a little bit about your professional career.
Well, I started out, I went to training camp with the Milwaukee Bucks right after graduating from Purdue. Got cut, played in the D-League, went to Puerto Rico, played for the summer. And then there was the lockout in the NBA, so decided, you know, perfect time to give Europe a shot. And, you know, so I've been in Germany for the past 3 years. And last year we lost in the finals, so we were runner-up there. And now this year we are currently in fourth place. You know, trying to battle for the best playoff seeding we can get.
Now, you've played at Puerto Rico. You've played in Germany. Tell me a little bit, what's the difference in you know, a lot of these leagues are so different everywhere. A little bit about the difference between playing in the Puerto Rican League and also the German League.
I think they're kind of similar in some ways, but also they're pretty different. You know, in the German League, we're able to have six imports, so six guys that are not German citizens. You know, so that's a little bit different. Most places you can only have two, you know, imports, and that definitely helps this league out a little bit and making the German League, you know, quickly becoming one of the better leagues in Europe because there's so many positions and it makes the teams you know, really competitive. I would compare the German league, the way that they play defense, everybody, and the style of play kind of to a Big Ten style. You know, it's physical, a lot of defense played. And in Puerto Rico, it was kind of a get up and down, you know, we're gonna outscore you type of game.
You know, you before you went to Purdue, you were a three-sport star athlete at Huntington North High School. You know, in this day and age where kids are specializing in certain sports so early, why do you think that playing three sports like you did in high school helped develop you as an athlete?
You know, I just think it always kept me competitive. And, you know, I know people are going to say, well, you know, sports are becoming, you know, a year-round thing. And, you know, I get that, but, you know, I wanted to be competitive in different things. And, you know, I think it just helped me learn a lot more lessons through sports about life than I would have just playing one sport, you know, kind of just figuring out that basketball was my true love and just kind of stopping, you know, playing football and baseball you know, as I was growing up. And, you know, I was pretty good at football, was pretty good at baseball, and I loved, you know, hanging out with my friends, being competitive and going on, you know, the away trips, playing in those games. But I still always found time to play basketball. And, you know, my baseball coach in high school was actually really understanding. And if I had a big AAU tournament, you know, depending on who we played, you know, he would let me maybe skip out of that baseball game and go to the AAU tournament depending. So, you know, I was kind of fortunate in that case. But I think, you know, keeping the competitive juices going, you know, playing multiple sports can be beneficial. But I can understand when people say, you know, that it can kind of, you know, hurt you in some way, or you could get hurt. But, you know, my response to that would be, you know, you can get hurt doing anything these days. And, you know, you just got to kind of go out there and, you know, do the things you love and play as hard as you can.
You know, as you got done with your high school career at Huntington North, you know, and you're going through the recruiting process. First, I got two questions. First, were you recruited at all to play baseball or football in college? And then also, take us through the recruiting process in basketball where you chose Purdue.
You know, I was had some interest in baseball, but I played shortstop, and I definitely wouldn't have been a shortstop moving forward. I would have been an outfielder, and there was a couple times, there was two major league scouts, one from the Nationals and one from the Yankees, that saw us play. And I actually got a pretty good response back from them, but baseball to me is just kind of a boring, you know, it's just not a lot of action all the time when you have a dominant pitcher on the mound, and, you know, you can only bat once at every nine. So, you know, it's kind of a, you know, the waiting game, I guess, in some situations. In football, I had some interest. You know, I got a lot of letters and things like that, but my high school football coach was very good at communicating to me and kind of, you know, keeping me in the loop. And it got to the point where I just kind of told him that, you know, no matter what came, I wanted to play basketball at the next level. And, you know, just to inform anybody that got a hold of him and kind of, you know, to shut down that process, you know, kind of in the early stages of the football season. So, but with the basketball, you know, I got recruited by a lot of mid-majors, you know, got some offers. And I got offered by Iowa. I went and visited Indiana, Ohio State. I went to visit Ball State, you know, Purdue offered, and I went to visit. And just meeting with Coach Painter, and at that point it was Coach Lusk, Coach Martin. I was, as soon as I left, I knew that that was a place that I wanted to go solely based on, you know, those coaches. And then I met a few players. I think I met Carl Landry and David Teague that would have been seniors when I got there, and you know, they were great guys. You know, they were always, you know, there if I needed anything, to lend a helping hand. You know, so they kind of sold me on that. And then you know, I kind of wanted to be part of something special. You know, part of, you know, Purdue at that point was really struggling in the Big Ten, and wanted to kind of be, you know, that person that kind of helped make that jump back up to, you know, being that dominant factor in the Big Ten, and, you know, back to the national scene. And we were very fortunate to do that.
And you know, we're really happy that you picked Purdue. Us Purdue fans, you were, just I said, you're fan favorite, and people loved the way you played. And, you know, defensively, you know, you were a four-time All Big Ten defensive player. And you're one of the greatest that played Purdue history defensively. But what did Chris Kramer do to make himself such a great defender?
You know, I think I was, you know, some of it had to do with, you know, playing baseball and playing football. You know, in football, I played defense. I was a safety or a corner. And, you know, just having the knack for the ball and, you know, seeing the ball or, you know, anticipating where it was on the go, you know, in football and in baseball playing shortstop, you know, that definitely helped me playing defense and running through the passing lanes. But Coach Martin and David Teague, my freshman year in the summer, really pushed me to be the best defender I could and really take pride in, you know, becoming that stopper. And, you know, I knew going into my freshman year that that was going to be really my only way to step foot on the court, is if I could be that lockdown defender and kind of help out David Teague, you know, in defending and, you know, kind of take a little pressure off him so he could score more points for us. And, you know, I put all my effort in there and, you know, was very fortunate enough to, you know, start my first collegiate game. And, you know, I guess the rest is, you know, kind of history from there.
You know, your mom, you know, she got a lot of FaceTime during Purdue broadcasts. She's a true Boilermaker. And what exactly, what did your parents instill in you to make you such a great competitor?
You know, I think they, you know, just always was, you know, if you're going to do something, you got to do it 100%. And, you know, you're never going to give up. And, you know, they didn't care, you know, what the score was. No matter what I did, I had to do it, you know, the best way I could and give it my all. And, you know, those are some qualities I feel like, you know, in today's game, you know, I feel like people are kind of coddled too. They kind of, you know, with all the AAU things and the rankings, I feel like people, you know, feel like they have a sense of notoriety as a freshman going into certain places, and they feel like they don't have to work as hard as they need to. And that's why, you know, a lot of kids, when the pressure gets put on them, they start to transfer. They start to, you know, second guess their decisions because they've never, you know, had to work as hard as they are in the current situation they are in. And, you know, I'm, you know, very blessed with my parents, you know, instilled some of those qualities into me to never give up and, you know, work as hard as I can at, you know, the task at hand and, you know, try to be the best I can.
Now, you said, you know, you talked about David Teague being an upperclassman when you were an underclassman. When you were an upperclassman, that's when Hummel, Moore, and Johnson came in. And did you know early on that they were going to be a pretty special group and contribute already as freshmen?
You know, so they would have came in my sophomore year, and in that,
yes,
in that summer when we were working out before they got there, or no, after the season, we started working out after my freshman year, you know, preparing for the next year. And, you know, we knew they were going to be good. We knew Rob has, you know, was very versatile. We knew Juwan might take a little bit of time, you know, making that jump. You know, but we knew he was going to be special, and we knew Etuan would step in and could score the ball because he's done it his whole life up to that point. And, you know, those things kind of transfer pretty, you know, if you can score the ball, you can always score the ball. And, you know, he kind of has an unorthodox game that, you know, let him be successful in all aspects of the game. So we knew they were going to be good, and, you know, we knew we had to come in and incorporate those guys right away so we could kind of make that jump and, you know, try to make a splash in the Big Ten and nationally, I guess, you know, as soon as they step foot on. And I think the older guys definitely pushed them and, you know, kind of got them ready for the you know, what they were going into in the first season of playing at Purdue. And, you know, they worked as hard as they could on their games in the weight room to make themselves ready. And, you know, collectively, you know, we all gelled together. We all wanted to win, which is the biggest thing. And, you know, there wasn't one individual person that was kind of selfish. You know, we all would defer to others. We all sacrificed a little bit for the betterment of the team. And, you know, I feel like that's why we are so successful as, you know, a unit.
Yeah, you know, as I said earlier, you always gave 110%, you know, to be named four times to the Big Ten defensive team is something special. Now, when you watch Aaron Kraft for Ohio State, did you see a younger Chris Kramer?
You know, I actually did an interview for the Big Ten .org, and they kind of asked me a similar question. And, you know, I think there's some similarities, but I think there's some differences, too. I think Aaron is more of an on-ball defender. He's definitely he would be like that fly that doesn't leave you alone, that's just right there all the time in your face. And he can definitely put a lot of pressure on the ball. He has active hands. He has quick feet. He gets a lot of deflections and steals that way, where I was kind of a better off-the-ball defender, you know, chasing guys off screens and some of that stuff. I think if you could take some of my best qualities and his best qualities, I think we could have one heck of a defensive player. But he definitely had a an unbelievable career. He's definitely in that category of, you know, we love to have you on our team and we hate to play against you. And, you know, yeah. I think that can be, in some senses, you know, the best compliment an opposing team can give you.
Okay, you know, the Boilermakers had a tough couple of years here. Have you talked to Coach Painter much during the last couple of years?
I've talked to him a little bit. You know, being over here, I try to kind of stay away a little bit, but I watch the games, and, you know, we'll talk maybe a couple of times during the year. But, you know, being an outsider, it's definitely I'm a little bit different. And, I mean, I try to watch every game I can depending on the time. You know, being 6 hours ahead sometimes, you know, staying up till 6 in the morning, watching the end of a game is kind of rough. But, you know, I just feel like, you know, they lack consistency. And, you know, they'll play really well one game, and then the next game, it's like they won't even show up. And I feel like that's a lack of leadership on the court. You know, I feel like there has to be that guy mm-hmm. that's playing that has to hold everybody accountable. And, you know, I know Coach Painter had him ready to play. I know they knew what was going on offensively and defensively for the other opponent going into the game. They knew how to attack, you know, what the other team was going to do on offense and defense. You know, so just going out there and seeing so many mental mental mistakes, you know, time after time after time, you know, it was definitely frustrating. And when it got down to the down stretch of the game where, you know, we're winning and we're close, we always found a way to lose the game instead of found a way to win, you know. And, you know, that's definitely frustrating in that case too. But, you know, I think moving forward, you know, the days are definitely brighter for Purdue. And I think A.J. Hammons will definitely test the waters of the NBA. I think right now he was, when I looked the other day, he was a second-round draft pick. So I think he'll definitely come back unless he does something that just dazzles NBA guys. I think he's, you know, 1 year away from being a complete dominant force offensively and defensively in the collegiate game. And will make, you know, that much better of a pro with one more year. You saw at the end of the year he started to play with more minutes, with being able to stay out of foul trouble for the most part. You know, if you could get A.J. Hammons to play between 28 and, you know, 35 minutes a game and stay out of foul trouble, it definitely changes the dynamic of Purdue, especially with some of the guys that are coming in this year. That'll be freshmen. You know, I think they'll keep on developing. I think Rafael Davis will be, you know, kind of the head of the monster. You know, he's going to be the leader. You know, he definitely goes out there and plays as hard as he can, and he does everything he can for the team to win. And I think that leadership will help Purdue in the summertime and moving forward. And, you know, the transfer of Ronnie Johnson, I think, is just addition by subtraction. And, you know, he doesn't want to be there. You know, Purdue fans got to, you know, understand that, okay. But, you know, we're moving forward, you know, with or without you. And, you know, it's next man up. And, you know, I don't care if that's, you know, a freshman, or, You know, if we get somebody else from JUCO or whatever else Coach Painter is going has going on, I have no idea. But, you know, next man up has to be ready to play. And, you know, it's just a, you know, when somebody leaves, it's another opportunity for somebody else. And, you know, they just got to be ready to take full advantage of it.
I had a question text me during your last answer. The question is, do you ever think that Coach Painter would ever play zone?
You know, I don't think zone is the answer, to be honest. I understand people want to keep A.J. Hammonds out of foul trouble. But we have enough problems rebounding the ball, playing man-to-man when everybody's right by each other, and it's so hard to rebound out of a zone. And, you know, the communication is such a key aspect of playing a zone defense, and, you know, we lack communication so bad in so many different instances, so I don't think it really would have helped us. And, I mean, you know, the staple of Purdue is, you know, playing hard man-to-man defense, and, you know, that's just something he's had – you know, from playing under Coach Katy and then coaching, you know, with Coach Katy. And I just don't think it'll change, to be honest. And, you know, I think, you know, they have the capabilities to be a great defensive team. They just got to, you know, have the pride in themselves, you know, to get up and try to defend their man one-on-one and not rely on any help.
Okay, Chris, you know, in your off season, do you ever get a chance to make it down to work at West Lafayette to work out with the current Boilermakers?
You know, our season goes so late most of the time. I mean, especially last year, I was here until like the middle of June. So we try to have like a mini camp at Purdue with some of the guys that still play. You know, we started that last season, and you know, so I hope I can make it back for that, but it just depends on, you know, the timing and how everything works out over here. You know, I would like to go back and kind of talk and, you know, kind of show them how things need to be done and, you know, what it takes to be successful at the collegiate level and, you know, just pass on some advice, you know, on to some of the younger guys or even the older guys that have had some, you know, tough patches. You know, because it just takes 1 year to turn something around, and I hope this next year is the year for Purdue.
Well, I can tell you as a Purdue fan, if we can get Chris Kramer down to help out the team, we'd totally appreciate it, because we know just how, if we can get them to start playing just like you play defense, we'll be happy fans. And I'll tell you what, I told you this off air. I want to tell you on air because my family will question that I told you this, but Liz Reed, Reese, and Rafe Milligan told me to tell you hi and to tell you that you are definitely their favorite Boilermaker.
Oh, well, thanks. I appreciate them. Tell them I said hello as well.
Okay, and Chris, you know, we hope to have you back on in the future, you know, to update us on what's going on with Chris Kramer, and we appreciate you for joining us today.
Hey, well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay, we'll be back on the Coach K and Joe Show right after this break.
Hi, this is Joe with the Coach K and Joe Show. Starting Friday, January 2nd, listen to the Coach K and Joe Show every Friday from 10 to noon on 93.7 The Scratch in Jasper. Coach K and I are excited to become a member of the Scratch family. So tune in every Friday to the Coach K and Joe Show on 93.7 The Scratch.
Does your website work for you? Your website is an employee. You wouldn't continue to pay an employee that didn't do his job, so don't pay for a site that doesn't produce results. Whether you don't have a site yet or want to improve an existing one, Josh at Idea Fusion Media can help. Want your site to be found easily on search engines like Google? How about growing your business via social media like Facebook? He can help with that as well. Idea Fusion Media, web design that works for you. For your free website review, visit ideafusionmedia.com. That's ideafusionmedia.com.
There it is, the holy grail of Christmas gifts, the Red Ryder 200-shot range model air rifle. And there he is, Red Ryder himself,
In his hand was the knurled stock of as coolly deadly-looking a piece of weaponry as ever I had laid eyes on.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back on the Coach K and Joe Show. Cody Zeller, boy, is CZ tearing it up. So is Tyler. TZ, both started. I think they were going to start against each other, maybe last night. Maybe the game hadn't been played yet. I'm going to have to check that out. Joe, I know you're muted right now, but I'm going to make this comment. You know, most people think I love doing this show because I get to work with Joe. And I can understand that. Joe's a good – Joe, wouldn't you, most people probably think I enjoy listening or doing this show because I'm working with you, right?
Yeah, oh, yeah. You love working with me. We work together in 3D.
We've kind of been chumming around since, what, maybe 15 or 16?
Oh, back in, yeah, we went to different elementary schools, but in high school we had the same study hall. And if you remember, we used to rate the girls in our class. We used to have the AP top 10 every week.
Well, I don't know about that, but let's not get too much into that. I don't even know what to say on that. You know what you do in when you're young, when the hormones are raging and all that other stuff. But we were always very respectful. We were always very respectful, and we worked hard for your dad at 3D.
Hey, well, we were respectful, but I'm not sure about the second part about working hard for my dad at 3D. There were wiffle ball games. There were different things that, you know, sometimes we worked harder at not working than we did actually working.
Well, the real reason I love doing the show is because I get to talk to people like my next guest. My next guest is Jeff Doyle, currently the principal at Barry High School in Montgomery, Indiana. He's coming on the show. He has recently been nominated and selected to be inducted as a member of the Silver Anniversary Team. 25 years later, Indiana High School Basketball Hall of Fame. I am so excited to have Jeff on the show. Jeff, welcome to the Coach Dan Joe Show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Coach. Glad to be on.
Well, I hope that when we're done, you are glad to be on. I'll just say that. Yeah, I think you will. You know, Jeff, let me start out by making you feel really warm and fuzzy. I've had an opportunity to coach against you. I've had an opportunity actually to do some color analysis when you moved on in the tournament and my team didn't. I was on the radio to watch you move on. I've watched you as a player at USI, where you were part of those national championship runs with Coach Pearl, you know, heading to the national championship. I've seen you grow as a professional from a coach and a teacher to an administrator. And I've got to tell you, when it came time to look at the possible nominees for the Silver Anniversary Team, there was no doubt in my mind, even though you didn't make the Indiana All-Star Team that year, knowing what I knew about you, there was nobody else on that nomination form that I thought had any more deserving, that was a non-Indiana All-Star team player, a deserving right to be a member of that team. You are a great competitor. And, folks, I'm telling you, when he's on the floor, you may know him off the floor, as nice a guy as can be, very professional, good person. When he's on the floor, he is a competitor. And, Jeff, congratulations on making the Silver Anniversary Team. It's quite an honor.
Well, thanks a lot, Coach. And, yeah, it was kind of something that I pointed to, you know, thinking back 25 years ago. It was a big disappointment that I didn't make the All-Star Team. You know, I thought with the things that I had done in high school, and the success that we had, team successes, I thought I had a really good chance of making the team. And share a quick story. I was selected to the top 40 that year, and you know, the top 40 was kind of, you know, like the tryout for those probably three or four guys that are on the bubble, and you know, the all-star coaches are there and have a chance to select the team. And going into that, I was, you know, I knew I needed to play well and thought I had a legitimate shot of making the team. And Coach Jack Kiefer was my coach that day. And at that time, you had five teams. They split you up, and eight was on your team. And before we started scrimmaging, Coach Kiefer got us together and told us, he said, hey, none of you guys have a chance to make the all-star team. Just go out there and have fun. And so, you know, coming from, you know, it was just like, wow, okay, no chance of making. Okay, I see how this is going. So, and you know what? I'll give Coach Kiefer right, or give him credit. He was right. I didn't make the team. So, and you know, it was one of those things that, you know, it was a disappointment, but I was able to, you know, move on because, you know, you look at that team in 1990, there was a lot of great guys, and there's nobody that I would point to and say, hey, this person shouldn't have made it. It's just one of those things, as you alluded to, as being a competitor, you feel like that you would be worthy of that selection. So moving 25 years later, you know, it was something that I pointed to and was hopeful that I could make it. So I was very happy that I did make the team.
Well, you bring up a couple of really good points, and I might add that Damon Bailey is a member of this Silver Anniversary team, so you know the kind of talent that we're talking about coming out at that time, and a lot of our listeners would at least know him, if not from his high school days, his college time at IU, and now coaching. I think he's an assistant girls coach at Butler, but has won a state championship as a girls high school coach. But I've worked the top 40 before when I was coaching, and I've had four players who I either coached through high school or part of their high school career that made the all-star team. I am a little disappointed that Coach Kiefer said that, phenomenal high school coach. I know when I worked the top 40, that was never anything in the discussion. We had no idea who was going to make the Indiana all-star team. That was the point of the top 40 workout. But the second thing is, I think is important, this is why I love the Silver Anniversary team with the Indiana Basketball Hall of Fame. It gives people a chance to not only go back and look at the players that were on the Indiana All-Star team, Jeff, but to also look at the really, really good players that existed outside of that All-Star team that had great high school careers. And, folks, I can tell you there were 50 to 75 players brought up as potential nominees 25 years later. So it wasn't just who was on the Indiana All-Star team. So you were in great company, Jeff Doyle, and you were a person, you know, Coach Brett, Steve Brett, and of course you played for the legendary Jack Butcher, who I was just so blessed to watch as a young guy growing up when my dad coached against him, play against him, and then ultimately get a coach against him. You played for a very demanding coach, a coach who had a specific way of wanting it done, a specific way of getting the very best out of his players and teams. Talk a little bit about 25 years later, making this team, but the things that put you in that position, the coaches, your teammates, your community. Talk a little bit about that.
When I graduated, you know, Ligotia went on to USI, and you talked a little bit about that, and just had the fortune to play. After 2 years, we made a coaching change, and we brought in Bruce Pearl, and that was his first college coaching job. And he came from the University of Iowa, and right away we went from a 10-18 team as a sophomore to a 22-7, making the NCAA Division II tournament. And got beat first round there. And then as a senior, we made it all the way to the national championship game, losing in the championship game. And then from there, I had an education degree. I ended up teaching 1 year at Evansville North with your brother. I believe your brother was in the physical education department. So I was there as a student teacher, and then I actually taught 1 year at Evansville North while I was in Evansville. I coached some boys and girls tennis at Castle High School, and actually had some success there. We had some pretty good teams. Actually, our girls team. We had an individual team that went to the Final Four in the individual tournament. And, you know, you talked, referred to me as a competitor, and, you know, I take that as a very high compliment. And I remember being up in Indianapolis at North Central Tennis Courts, and we actually had match point to go to the championship match for the individual doubles tournament. And I thought, you know, that's one of the things that I think is a highlight of my career. I mean, okay, it's a girls' sport, it's girls' tennis, but it was exceptionally high tennis. And then from there, I ended up moving back to the area, and I took a job at Shoals High School as a social studies teacher, and I stayed at Shoals 5 years and was the JV coach there all 5 years, and got my start in coaching under Tim Hawkins. And Tim is a good friend of mine, and he just kind of showed me the ropes, and just not only as far as in the teaching profession, but also as far as coaching, and a lot of gratitude towards Tim. And one small bit of information at Shoals that I'm proud of is the only time in the history of the Shoals-Ligoti series, Shoals swept the JV and varsity game. That's only been done once, and that was done in 1996, 1997. We had a really good player in Travis Brett on that team, and had some really good JV players. But Shoals was when I first got to Shoals, we had some really good teams there. And from there, I ended up going to North Davies, where I was an assistant principal, and stayed there for 10 years. And then about 3 years into my stay there, Coach Dalrymple, he pestered me each year to help him out. And, you know, I just always, you know, put him off, said, no, I really don't want to. And then we were in his office one day, and he told me that. And I said, okay, I'll do it. I said, I'm not going to come to anything in the summer. I'll just come to practices. And, you know, come to the games and practices. And I thought he'd be like, well, you know, you can't do that. He's like, okay, I'm signing you up. So I stayed there for 4 years, and we had some success. We won a sectional title and regional finalists. I got beat to Shaq Mack in 2006 in the regional championship, and then in 2009 we ended up making it to the Final Four, where we got beat to the eventual state champion in Jackson Dell. And Coach Dalrymple, he's one of the best coaches in the state of Indiana. Brent came to North Davies, where they never won a sectional, and won the school's first sectional, and now they've won four in his tenure, and just had a lot of success. And credit Brent with a lot of you know, developing me. And then after 10 years at North Davies, I came to Bar Reve as principal, and you know, got the coaching out of my blood, and this is my fourth year here, and just we've had some success here with our teams. And, you know, you talked about that resume. Our girls won the state title, and our boys were state runners-up last year. So I think all of those kind of things combined just kind of helped my resume.
You know, it's almost like success follows success, Jeff, and I mean that. I mean, good people, successful people, they seem to connect with other situations that become successful as well. And you are from, for our listeners, we're a national show, and so we have listeners all over the place. And if they know a little bit about Indiana high school basketball, then they might know about Ligoti, Indiana. They might know that you played for the winningest coach of all time in Indiana high school basketball. You grew up in a community, a couple thousand people or so, but when you talk about successful basketball, that was what you grew up with all your life, teams going out and doing what everybody thought they couldn't do in the one-class system. Didn't matter how big the school was, how small the school was, Ligoti knew how to win.
Absolutely. And, you know, I had a brother, J.R. Doyle. He graduated in 1982, and he was able to be a part of a couple of sectional championship teams. And actually, one trivia question for Ligoti fans is, who are the only brothers in Ligoti history to play on undefeated teams. So JR was able to do that in 1982, and then I was able to do it in 1990. But, yeah, you grew up just kind of with that Ligoti mentality, and I remember going to watch my brother's games and just knew that was something that I wanted to do. He had a lot of success on the court, and I wanted to experience the same thing. And it started at a very early year. age. I can remember Dave Cavanaugh. Dave's an official that's a known throughout the state of Indiana. He's actually a teacher at Lagodi. At about my time when I was coming through, he was just getting out of coaching, but he still coached me in third and fourth grade. And then just, all the way through, Kevin Biggs, Mike Wagner, Coach Jack Butcher, we got exceptional coaching at a small school, and I attribute a lot, my success to them. I think the one thing, people ask me about Coach Butcher, what makes him such a good coach. One of the things is he can develop individual players because, at a small school, and this coach, you're given, you don't have that many people to choose from, and you've got to work with those individuals. And Coach, he brought me into the gym a lot, and he helped me refine my skills, and I give him a lot of credit.
You make a great point. If you're going to play basketball, and the coaches that really care about the player development are going to do that. They're going to bring the kids in as much as possible and work with them individually together whenever they can. It's part of development. I know at my time at Washington Catholic, that was a constant flow in and out of the gym to get better. But you can't do it alone. Even though you have, even with coaches who help you develop, you got to play with some guys that understand the sweet spot. They know where to get the ball to you. They know what else they have to do on the court. Because to get an honor like this is not just being able to put some individual statistics up. You need to show that you're successful as a team as well, that what you do on the floor translates into success for the team. And that really was part of the process. What did they bring to their team? What did their teams do? They didn't have to win a state championship, but did it lead to success? Talk about some of the guys you played with and what they meant to you as far as being able to get to this point.
Well, I came, my freshman year, I didn't get to play any varsity at all. I didn't dress varsity at all. And then my sophomore year, I was able to start as a sophomore. And, we had two senior starters that year. Brian Ackerman was our point guard, and Scott Callison was a three-year starter. And those guys just, they provided a lot of leadership for us. Brant could score it, and he could pass it. I ended up averaging maybe 17, 18 points my sophomore year, and a lot of those were on passes from Brant. He would set you up, and it wasn't like I was making real difficult shots. You just get in the right place, and he'd find you. And then with Scott Callison, you had another big-time scorer to where, the other team just couldn't concentrate on one guy. And then we had Kenny Fry and Brian Grindstaff. Kenny Fry started as a freshman, and the one thing I can remember about Kenny is, as a freshman, the championship game of regional playing a very good North Harrison team who had the year before had won the Washington regional in return about all of their starting five. As Kenny went for 28 points in the regional championship game, and then just to move on, Jeff Nate was also a starter that year. Jeff started with me for 3 years, and just Jeff is a guy you look at him, you think, my God, that guy had to live in the weight room. Jeff never touched one weight. He just had a natural physique, and he was big and strong and a very good player. And then Brian Grindstaff, a great three-point shooter that I played with, and also a very good defender. And, I could talk about Scotty Arthur, who I played with as a junior. And then, the one thing I can think about of our 1990 team, we had a lot of guys that didn't get to play a lot that would have been starters at other teams. I can think of Chris Bateman. Chris, he grew up with me. He's probably one of my best friends. Chris was just a phenomenal player, and he didn't get to play a lot. But Chris was part of the team effort, and, he has fond memories of, going to the semi-state as seniors in an undefeated season. And, Will Walker, Will got to play a lot as a senior, but as a junior, didn't get to play a lot. Scott Bullock, a sixth man. He got to play, but, at another school, he'd probably been a starter. So my teammates, I just played with a lot of good people, so I've got to give them a lot of credit.
Well, you did play with some pretty good people and had some pretty good coaching. And I might add, and I know much to your chagrin, but this really is part of the story of who you are as a person. I was coaching a team at Washington Catholic. Your junior year, you guys were outstanding. Ranked in the top 20. This was back in the single class days. We were able to beat you in the sectional championship game I know you don't want to hear about it. I'm not going to dwell on it. We were able to come up with a tremendous, one of the great victories in Washington Catholic history and against a great team. But here's what struck me. You know, your coach was very competitive. I was very competitive. I wasn't very good when we didn't win. I was a good loser. You know, I know Coach Butcher is very competitive, too. But this is what I remember. I remember a Jeff Doyle coming up to me, seeking me out after the game, red eyes, bloodshot from the tears of losing one tough basketball game. And you coming up and congratulating me and saying how well we handled ourselves. I should be very proud of my team for what they accomplished. I remember that. That is not easy for anyone to do. And 25 years later, 26 years later, that's what really stuck with me about Jeff Doyle. And that's why, Jeff, it was a priority to promote you and others promoted you because of the not just the quality you were on the court, but the quality person you were off the court.
Well, I appreciate that, Coach. And, you know, 1989, if it gives you some solace, that's probably the most disappointing loss. Not that we didn't lose to a good team because, you know, we got you in the regular season, but what I think people failed to remember is that, you know, the regular season game was a battle. It was back and forth. It was a close game. And then, you know, it's one of those things. I compete as hard as anybody out there. But then, you know, as especially being the building leader, you know, that's something my parents always instilled in me is, you know, you've got to act the right way. And so I felt, you know, I knew a lot of those guys on the other team. I thought it was appropriate to go up to them and congratulate them on the game. And I still remember. I'll tell you a quick story about that game, Coach. Is Washington Catholic is up 1 point, and I can't remember who's shooting free throws, but they're getting two free throws, and Scotty Arthur fouled out of the game, and Chad Wade came in, and I went up to Chad, and I said, get ready. I said, if I get this rebound, I'm going down, and I'm going to pass it to you. Get ready for a 3-point shot. And so I think they hit the first free throw, go up two, miss the second. I get the rebound, dribble it down just like I told Chad I was going to do. I didn't pass him the ball, and I shot a baseline jumper, and I missed the shot. So I think Chad still gives me a hard time about saying I was going to pass it to him, but it just didn't happen that way. But and I also, you know, I played in two semi-states, and we got beat in the morning game both times. It's very good teams, and I can remember when you left and went on to Jasper, and you know, Washington Catholic ended up winning the regional that year, and I went down on the floor. You know, I was there rooting Ligoti on in the sectional championship game as another really good Washington Catholic Ligoti game, and you know I remember talking to Travis and Brian McTee and the Stimels and telling them, you know, I didn't know if we really believed that we could win in the semi-state. And I just told them, I said, you guys need to go there and you need to win. You guys are good enough. And, you know, it's just part of being a competitor. You've got to know how to lose the right way.
You know, Jeff, I don't want to take much more of your time. I think that people need to understand, I want my listeners to understand, even those outside of Indiana, in high school basketball in the state of Indiana, even though we've gone through the class change and that type of thing, it's still got tremendous history. It's got tremendous roots. It matters a lot when this time of year comes up. The Indiana Basketball Hall of Fame, which is located in Newcastle, is about as first class as you would ever think when you're talking about high school level sports. Tell us, as we end this segment, tell us, you know, I think the song Glory Days, but this goes past Glory Days because we're not in a bar talking about when you hit the shot or missed the shot or came back the next year as seniors and beat my team by 40 points at Bar Eve, put on a show, and I mean a show. Talk about what it means 25 years later, even though it might have been a goal and a hope, you can't control it. It's based on what people from around the state, but what people from around the state think about you and your career and put you on that list of 15 people or so, 18 people or so, to be the Silver Anniversary team for this induction year.
Yeah, it's just very humbling. I mean, when word came out Tuesday, the amount of phone calls, texts, Facebook messages, it was just, you know, I knew about the honor about 2 weeks ahead of time, and, you know, I thought I would get some, you know, some congratulations, and it was about 5-6 times what I thought. It was just, it was unbelievable. So it does, and what happened 25 years ago and the disappointment not making the All-Star team, I don't worry about that. I'm just so privileged, and it's an honor to be on this team. So there's no sour grapes for me at all. You know, it's just a big time honor, and Coach, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention, you know, the role that Steve Brett and you played in me getting on this team, because you've got to have advocates on your behalf that can tell your story, and you know, you can have stuff written down on paper, and but unless it's so much more powerful if you have somebody there that can speak to you, not only as a player but also what you've done past then. So I really appreciate everything that you did for me and helping me get this honor. And Coach Brett, Coach Brett's a first class person, and I thank the world of him, and I thank the world of you. And just, you know, it's just kind of funny how life goes and how people come in and out of your life. And just, you know, 25 years ago, or I guess 26 years ago, you gave me the worst loss of my life, and then you know, 26 years later, you know, you're doing things to benefit me, and you know, that's what's great about life, and that's why you treat everybody well, and you try to see the best in everybody. So I thank you so much for everything that you did for me.
Well, you know, in the end, it's Jeff Doyle, it's his brother, it's his community. They're the one. You guys shaped each other. You guys kept each other competitive. You guys made each other better. The coaches you had, you mentioned them, Coach Butcher and Biggs and Wagner. This is great for Southern Indiana. It's great for Jeff Doyle. It's great for, look, the community of Lagodi. It's great for future players to be on the All-Star team from the southern part of the state and to make the Silver Anniversary team. Travis Trice, Mark Heisel, Fair Oak North, Chris Lowry now coaching in college level from Evansville-Harrison. All you guys make the southern part of the state proud. I am so happy to have you. Boy, I wish I would have grown up with you. I'd probably be a much better person today if I would have. And I'm glad that you are leading and mentoring and guiding young people. And folks, listen, we all make mistakes. We all mess up. We all say things we shouldn't. But the bottom line is we have difficulties in our life. Things don't happen for us right away. Sometimes we just got to hang in there and wait on. I love these kind of stories because it speaks to the human and the human nature that if we just stand on what we believe in and who we are and keep moving forward, good things happen. And I am happy that good things have happened for you, Jeff Doyle. Thanks for being with us on the show.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Coach.
You go on and change lives, and that's what teachers and administrators do. Folks, just a great time talking to Jeff Doyle. So much more to go. We've got Major League Baseball winter meetings, contributor Jeff Cochran coming up a little bit later. Is Jay Cutler and his offensive coordinator in an unworkable situation? Article comes out, Cutler's offensive coordinator supposedly leaked to the media that Jay Cutler does a terrible job of audibling at the line, not changing out of bad plays, run plays, different things, not seeing the defense. Leaked it to the media. The offensive coordinator comes in and apologizes in front of the whole offensive team. Jay Cutler's supposedly shaking his head. Is that situation tenable? Can it work out in Chicago? If you're a Bears fan, who stays? Who goes? Do they both go? I don't know. Does the coaching staff go at the end of the year? We'll talk about that when we come back for a few minutes. Hey, thanks, Jeff Doyle. Thanks, Walt Ferber. You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Hi, this is Joe with the Coach K and Joe Show. Starting Friday, January 2nd, listen to the Coach K and Joe Show every Friday from 10 to noon on 93.7 The Scratch in Jasper. Coach K and I are excited to become a member of the Scratch family. So tune in every Friday to the Coach K and Joe Show on 93.7 The Scratch.
You know, Coach, I'll end this real quick by inviting people. Take your kids out to a basketball game. Take them to a swim meet. Take them to a wrestling meet. You know, Indiana high school sports or high school sports in any state that you're listening to us at. You know, for the money you pay, you get a great value. So for Coach K, this is Joe saying we'll see next on the Coach K and Joe Show.
The following presentation of the Coach K and Joe Show was brought to you by Idea Fusion Media, Hubler and Sons of Jasper and Vincennes, Harmon Dental Care, and by Jasper Today. See you next week.
Do you remember?